Podcast. It is Wednesday, June the 19th. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, I always want to start the show by giving a shout out to the patrons of the podcast, patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. These are listeners of the show around the world who get value out of this show and throw a couple bucks in the tip jar, basically, to keep the lights on, pay for fees, help be able to fund some of this project that I do, which is the podcast. So shout out to Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian, Stan, Kristen, Sarah, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. So these are all people that are making or have made monetary donations to the podcast in some form. So basically it's this pool of donations that I'm going to be using for equipment or different things like that, basically as a, again, a thank you, hey, for putting this show out kind of thing. So last week, I hope that you guys enjoyed the interview with my daughter. Very short episode. My oldest daughter, Zoe, was on the podcast. I actually got a lot of really great feedback about it, despite it only being 9 minutes and not really about TMS at all. But I love that she said that she learns about all the emotions in her class, which is, you know, pretty cool for a little kid to talk about. So this week there's going to be a few things that I'm going to talk about, and more or less this is going to be a basically I've thought about it this way. I can quantify my approach to this podcast in two ways. Either I'm going to have an interview with somebody who is an expert in the field, or somebody who has gone through this stuff and come out the other side, or it's just me more shooting from the cuff and talking about things that make sense to me, different observations that I have when it comes to TMS or chronic pain or chronic injuries. But before I started today, I wanted to talk about the next several weeks. I've got a lot of really cool interviews lined up. In fact, I think I have 8 weeks of interviews lined up, 10 weeks of interviews lined up. So 4 or 5 interviews that are scheduled. They're going to happen. The first one should air next week, but there's going to be a filmmaker on the show. There's going to be a coach on the show. Jim Prusak, the Mind Body PT, is going to be back on the show. So there's a lot of things that are coming up. I'm actually really excited that I booked this interview with Jim, with Dr. Prusak, because one thing that I really want to touch into a lot as it comes to this show and chronic pain in general is what makes athletes susceptible to TMS and susceptible to chronic pain. I'm not talking about little aches and pains and that's it. I'm talking big injuries. And one of the things that made me think about that is that in the CrossFit world, there's an athlete named Brooke Entz. So you can look her up, Brooke, and then last name spelled E-N-C-E. But Brooke Entz had spinal fusion surgery in her neck due to some herniated discs. It happened either a couple years ago, a year ago, 3 years ago, something like that. Wasn't that long ago. But basically, I don't believe that there was any precipitating one isolated thing that happened. I think it was I'm having some issues, and so I'm going to go and get my neck MRI'd, and boom, there's some herniated discs. So it wasn't like she fell out of a car or got in a car accident or fell out of a plane or, you know, something crazy like that. I think it was just starting to have some symptoms, tingling in the hands, stuff like that. And then goes and gets the MRI done, and coincidentally, there is some bulging issues. One interesting thing, so she had the spinal fusion surgery. So far has not gotten back to the athletic level that she was at before that. Still an amazing athlete. But it started to get me to think about a couple of people that I know in the CrossFit world. One who had spinal fusion surgery, still has persistent pain beyond that. And then another one who just got MRI'd of their neck, and there are bulging herniated discs issues. And I start thinking deeper about that study that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine in the early 90s that said 70% of people with no symptoms of pain whatsoever are walking around right now with a herniated disc in their back somewhere. So I just think it's really interesting. And when I started thinking about Brooke Entz's injury and CrossFit and that collective consciousness idea, which I'm going to touch on in a second with the epidemic of this stuff, which I promised I'd talk about 2 weeks ago and then never did. But basically, if you're a hardcore CrossFitter and you really enjoy this training and you hear that a top star in the sport has herniated discs in her neck, there's a piece of your mind that thinks about, oh, what if that injury happened to me? And it's almost like subconsciously going out and searching for that kind of a problem. So Your hand starts to tingle, or you start to have some neurological issues. You go and get an MRI done, and boom, there's a herniated disc. And the challenge is that, hey, once this thing heals, or once once I'm better from it, or whatever the case is, will another issue pop up? Maybe the knee then starts to hurt. Maybe your skin then starts to act up. Your stomach starts to have issues. You start becoming allergic to things that you weren't allergic to before. So there's this whole slew of things that can happen. And it makes me think about the epidemic of chronic pain. Chronic pain is an epidemic of fear. It's not an epidemic of anything else other than fear. And so people start hearing about certain types of injuries. People start hearing that ulcers are a thing, and everybody that's stressed gets an ulcer. So once people understood that this was a link to something psychological, suddenly people weren't getting ulcers anymore. They were not happening at the astronomical rate that they were in the 60s and the 70s and the early 80s. Back pain is the equivalent to that. RSI was the equivalent to that several years ago, and I think that's tapered off quite a bit as well. But there's a whole variety of this stuff. And in the United States, I don't know how it is in other places, but in the United States, we see advertisements all the time for pharmaceuticals. And these pharmaceuticals run a variety of risks. They're talking about fibromyalgia and bad nerves and bad neural pathways and things like that. When there's been thousands of people that have been cured entirely of fibromyalgia through mind-body work, repressed emotions, addressing those kind of things. And so I just think it's really fascinating that pain and incidences of pain have really sort of taken over our idea of what life should be like. I think the expectation is that we're going to have these kind of chronic issues. And when I think a little bit deeper about that, I think about the homes to which you grew up in. If your mother or your dad was always talking about the pain they had in insert your spot, you start to have pain. And it's no different than a spouse that seemingly is always injured or always has some kind of a health issue. You may always be injured and always have a health issue. I see this kind of stuff all the time where there's a couple and both people have persistent pain issues. Sometimes they're in the same place, sometimes they're not. It's just really fascinating to me. So TMS certainly is it's an epidemic problem. And I wouldn't doubt that the shoulder issues that I've talked about for a long time on this podcast that I eventually had surgery for, shoulder issues and shoulder injuries and dislocated shoulders and torn labrums and all that stuff, that was all the rage in CrossFit a couple of years ago as well, 3-4 years ago in weightlifting and CrossFit. So who knows if that was really the root problem of anything. I don't suspect it was, because as soon as the shoulder healed, the neck and the back started acting up and the sciatica started and the knee issue started. So, it's really interesting is just being able to ultimately satisfy the vice of whatever it is that we have. And it got me to also thinking about the accommodation of stressors. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and one commercial I hear about a lot of these anxiety blankets. So people come home from work or their family or whatever, they're super stressed out about things, you know, being able to get food on the table for everybody, be able to work all the hours that their boss insists that they have, be able to travel as salespeople the way that they need to travel. They come home and they slip into a weighted anxiety blanket. So they spend extra money to Band-Aid fix a problem that's rooted in the mind. It's not a whole lot different from people that come home and they drink more wine, or they sit at a desk all day. They associate their neck pain with muscle imbalances or shitty posture or whatever the case is. And they go and they buy a neck hammock, right? And somehow this is loosening up all the vertebrae in their neck. And so now that they're going to be out of pain, so they pay for another device to essentially crutch what their problem is. They use a foam roller. There's so many things out there that really is like we're Band-Aid fixing so many things. If we're able to address what's really going on in our lives and the things that we're repressing, we're going to talk about this on the podcast in a few weeks in an interview that I have with somebody, but this idea of toxic positivity. And so toxic positivity meaning, for instance, that I have 2 kids and a wife and I live in the suburbs. I have a nice house. I have 2 motorcycles. I have a nice car, all that kind of stuff. I should, for all intents and purposes, I should absolutely just be the happiest guy on earth and everything's positive and yes, 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 yes. And everything's great and always smiling and always, you know, look at the bright side and all this kind of thing. By doing that, I am inherently also telling myself that this stuff isn't hard and that life isn't hard and that job should be easy and I should feel blessed and I should be happy all the time and should never feel upset. Because then if I feel upset or I feel angry or I feel sad about really anything, I then feel guilty. I'm implying that there should be guilt there if I'm not thankful and having gratitude every 5 seconds of the day. And so then I'm just further repressing. And that's really where a lot of these problems are happening. And so people have a variety of vices to sort of numb those emotions that they don't want to feel. And so they come home, they have a shitty diet, they take Valium, they drink a lot of wine, they buy neck hammocks, they buy anxiety blankets. Instead of, I think about this kind of stuff too with services like Uber Eats or anything really that is made to really like accommodate a quote unquote busy lifestyle. I think all too often, especially in the professional world, there's this real problem with just slowing down a little bit, even if it's just slowing down for 10 extra minutes a day and dedicating it to yourself. First of all, that's known as a bad thing, is to be taking care of yourself is number one, when you really have to do that in order to live a satisfying life and be able to really serve anybody else, whether that be your kid or your customers or your spouse or whomever it is. But I think about these things that are meant to accommodate us, like Uber Eats and like really outsourcing anything. I've been talking to my wife recently about hiring a landscaper, for instance. Maybe I kind of like the idea of being able to slow down and work in the yard a little bit. And it's actually been really, really nice to mow the lawn, do the hedges, pull some weeds, kill some stuff with some Roundup. Like it's been kind of nice. And I bought this second motorcycle not long ago, this KLR 250 dual sport off-road bike. Never been into that. But as I said on this podcast, the first week of the year, I wanted to find a non-technology related hobby that I could start in 2019. Off-road motorcycling is the one. I did it for the first time this past weekend. It was a blast. I'll get into that in a couple of seconds. But basically, I bought the bike on a Thursday, turned it on Friday. It was running terribly. And then I just couldn't really get it to start. I couldn't get it to start and couldn't get it to stay running. And normally, with any sort of a mechanical anything, I would have taken this thing to a mechanic, had them work on it. I called mechanics, got opinions. I called mechanics to try and get it in. Hey, guys, like, look at this thing and tell me what's wrong with it, or look at this thing and fix it. Kind of trying to take the easy way out. Because I didn't want to slow down all the other things in my life to work on this motorcycle. I just want to go riding or whatever. Thankfully, none of them had any time available. And so for the first time in my life, I took apart a carburetor. I rebuilt it, changed the gaskets, changed the screws, changed the jets, took the top part of the engine off, adjusted all the valves, changed the oil, changed the spark plug. What else did I do? Emptied the gas tank, ran seafoam cleaner through the entire fuel system, put the premium gas in it, adjusted the idle, adjusted the mixture screws. So like there was all this stuff I did. Turned on the bike, ran like a top. I took it out this past weekend for my first time ever doing off-roading. Ran some single track trails at this off-road park that's about an hour north of my house. Had a freaking blast. I did it for an hour and 45 minutes, wiped out two or three times, but had a blast, an absolute blast. And so the lesson and the thought that I had to spend 10 or 12 hours of my own time, whether it be late at night, early in the morning, whatever it is, to work on this motorcycle and get it running, like the amount of pride that I feel to be able to do that was so cool. And it was something, being able to use my hands and be physical and that kind of thing. Like, what a reward. I get way more gratification out of that than of handing it over to somebody else and having them, you know, having them work on it. So just a thought that I had. The other thing I was thinking about too, and it's a little bit off topic, but I was thinking about this idea of, again, going back to that toxic positivity and thinking that everything's great and all this. Caitlin Michaels, the Mind Body Mastery podcast, I talk about her all the time. I think she's wonderful. Go check her out. Rate her podcast. She's got a great voice for this stuff. But her podcast topic this week talked about basically that there is no black and white, the yin and the yang. And so if we assume that everything is terrible about something, being able to stop for a second and try and see something positive in it. But it also works the opposite way. So if all you see is positivity in something and that's it, not being able to see the dark side of it, that can be equally as problematic. But ultimately, these are the kind of things that get us stuck. And it's been said before that black and white doesn't get us stuck. It's the gray that gets us stuck. It's the conflict. Like that's what's going on inside of us, is a conflict of some kind that exists. So if we say this thing is great and it's wonderful and it's the best thing ever, like if I were to say that being a dad and having kids is the most wonderful thing ever, nothing can ever top it. It's the best thing of all time. There is nothing negative about it. But inside of me somewhere is a fiery inferno that's raging about how hard it is to be a dad. Father's Day was this past weekend, how hard it is to be a dad, there's the conflict. Like, there inherently is the conflict. So maybe take a few minutes and evaluate your life. What is something you see only as negative, and what is something you see only as positive? Because likely there's a flip script there somewhere. You need 180 degree in the evaluation of that. I think it'd be pretty valuable. So I'm actually going to jump over to the Facebook group, the Mind and Fitness Podcast, Deleters of Pain, which is where I pull some show topics sometimes, what people want me to talk about. So there's been some suggestions that have come up. Let's see here that I can talk about. So this came from a listener. I kind of like that you sped through the last few questions, message heard, all the little details in mind and wanderings or distractions. Just believe, get in touch with your feelings and get on with your life. Okay, so that wasn't a question. The next one. Okay, so I'm rereading The Great Pain Deception. I read it 5 or 6 years ago, and I'd love for you to devote a show to resuming physical activity. Everything I've been reading lately says to take it slow, but both Sarno and Ozanet seem to advocate jumping right into the vigor. As a fitness-related podcaster, I'd love your take on it. So I really don't think that I could have gotten back into the activity that I wanted to do without jumping back in with that vigor. So I've talked about this before, but I'll break it down again for people that haven't listened to it. This is 75 episodes in, so I wouldn't blame you if you didn't go back and listen to all 75, though you should. There's a lot of really good content in there. But basically, we're coming up on the two-year anniversary, but sometime at the end of June in 2017, this might have been like June 30th, ish. It was sometime around that. I was searching on Amazon for mobility tools for back pain. And in the suggested products that was listed on the page of the thing that I was looking at, whatever that was, it said healing back pain, the mind and body connection. And it had 1700 reviews or something like that. And it was almost 5 stars. So I click on it and I started reading the reviews, and it was amazing because it was just like, wow, there is not one consensus anywhere that I can find on Amazon about back pain or pain of any kind that the general consensus is this positive. So I'll buy it. I bought it. I read it in 2 nights, maybe 3 nights, and it just blew my mind. And since he said get back to physical activity, I hadn't been to a gym. It'd been 6 months since I'd worked out at a gym and did, you know, heavy weightlifting and CrossFit and muscle ups in the rings and all this kind of stuff. And that's where the crossroads is. So if you read something that says to take it slow, and if you read something that says get, you know, with the most vigor, get back to it, that's going to be your call. And you're going to have to choose what side you're going to fall on. And I know that for me, I just knew that that's what I had to do. And so went to the CrossFit gym that I'd been going to before all this stuff started getting really bad. And I prepaid for 3 months of membership. So I think I paid $500 and something because now I'm locked in. It's the same reason that fitness coaching, as an example, a lot of the talk around online fitness coaches is how much to charge a client per month. And a lot of those price points revolve around $500 per month per client, which sounds insane. And the first time I heard that, I thought that was insane. And then when I started really thinking about it, I'm like, there's the skin in the game for people. Because if you were to only put in $50 for a coach or $100 for a coach or whatever it is for a month, how truly vested in it are you? Monetarily speaking, the way that we can feel invested in something is that we spend a lot of cash on it. That's why we take care of our houses. That's why if we buy an expensive car, we want to make sure that we're not treating it like total shit. And this goes for everything. You buy an expensive TV, you're not going to bash up that TV. Whereas if you spent $50 on a TV at a pawn shop, you probably don't really care if something happens to it. It's not a big deal. You know, it's just the way that it is. So it's all about what the value is to you. And so this, you know, this works in a lot of ways. And so by going in and dropping $500 on being a member of a gym and nothing more, like, that means that I'm vested in. Like, I am all in. So within a few days, I was back squatting close to 300 pounds, and I was doing muscle ups in the high rings, gymnastics movements and such. A few weeks later, I still had pain. Like, don't get me wrong, it took a long time for the most chronic of the chronic stuff to clear up. But the big dent that I think that I felt was, if for nothing else, jumping fully back in, and I'm telling my system, hey, you did that and you don't feel worse. Hey, you did that and your back didn't break in half. So it's that continuous messaging that's so important. And when Dr. Prusak comes back on the podcast, that is what we are dedicating the whole episode to, is TMS and athletes being able to get back to sport and do things like that. I think it's ultra critical. I mean, even if you're a runner and you start feeling that plantar fasciitis or you start feeling numbness in your leg or something like that, like that's nut cutting time for you. That's the fork in the road. That's time to make the choice. Like, are you all in or are you not all in? And if you stop or you back off or you baby it too much, then I feel like you're not all in. It may sound like tough love, but that's really what, that to me, I've always said, like, that's the most important part of being able to get back. Let me see what else is on here, actually. So far, we don't have much here. Okay, so a related question, how to confront pain with exercise in a productive way when you've been exercising despite pain all along. I'm stubborn. I like to exercise, and my PTs told me I wouldn't make it worse, so that's what I had been doing. So you say PTs. I don't know if you mean that you're actively still working with PTs. It sounds like there's not much of a reason to if you are. But I think continue exercising. It's not causing you any more pain. It's not causing any more of a problem. Maybe you're not spending enough time in the mind part of it. That's what we're going to get to next is the next person wrote in, loving your podcast. Thank you so much. Would you do another show on your thoughts about emotions? Your podcast with Dan Buglio was the first I've heard about letting go of the stories and doing the right now I feel. Also, your comment about how the coach from Zero Pain encouraged you to move more into rage. Did that help? Was it authentic to keep repeating that? Those kind of specific details of the daily work would be much appreciated. Repetition is good for us because I hear new things the further along I get. And then it says then you, but I think it means thank you. okay, so the coach from Zero Pain Now didn't tell me, I guess he said this in the interview we did, which you can go back. I can't remember the episode number, but it was back in October. Adam Heller is his name. But he's a big proponent of what is bothering me right now. That's why it's called Zero Pain Now as opposed to Zero Pain, is that it's what's going on right now. Because whatever it is that's continuing your pain is something that's going on in the nervous system right now. So what's the threat right now to me, basically? And I think that what's genius about that approach, as opposed to, journaling about 30 years ago or things like that, is there's so much stuff to unearth, and you may be trying to find a needle in a haystack, or you may be trying to find a red herring by trying to go back in your childhood and figure out this event when your dad yelled at you or your mom spanked you or something like that. It's so tough to do. And even in Sarno's work, that list of things that's upsetting me or writing about historical events is really only, it's 33% of the equation. The other part of it is, in a lot of ways, is being able to identify your own personality traits and digging into that. And so, was it productive of me to keep having the repetition? Did I feel like moving into the rage portion was, did it for me or does it for me? I think that it does. And there's a lot of different ways to describe rage. It can be anger. It can be fury. But there's really only a few words that you can associate with that. Sadness is probably one of them too. But feeling emotions, it's tough. Because like if you Google feel emotions, what does that even mean? Feeling emotions in your body is really different. And so what Adam Heller advocates for is thinking of that area really between your, he says your sternum and your belly button. I would expand it a little bit and say your jaw to your belly button probably, but being able to, again, I think about like the Tony Stark arc reactor in the chest, which I've talked about this before. I talked about it 2 weeks ago on the podcast, and being able to isolate to that one spot, closing your eyes and just imagining that spot. You're staring at it. It's there. You're going to start to feel some sensations in your body. Like I promise you, you really have to lock your attention on it. This isn't something where you set 10 minutes and do it, or 20 minutes and do it, or 30 minutes and do it. You're probably only going to be able to have this intense concentration go on for a minute or maybe 2 minutes, probably not 3 minutes. And you got to do it when you're not driving and there's not really much noise around. You need to be able to devote every ounce of you to that one spot. Like no phone distractions, no work, no Facebook, nothing, no podcast. Turn this off. You're going to do that. But you're closing your eyes and imagining that spot. I've been doing this before bed because it's the closest time that you're going to get to the alpha brain waves and the parasympathetic nervous system getting activated and all that kind of stuff is right before bed. Ultimately, really any point during the day, you're going to feel a lessening of symptoms somewhere. Let's say that your feet hurt, as an example, and you do this exercise that I'm telling you to do, which is thinking about that Tony Stark arc reactor right in your chest and imagining that spot, and you're going to start to feel some sensations likely in your chest or your stomach or your neck or somewhere around that in your trunk. And sometime I would say within the next few hours, that pain in your feet is going to lessen and maybe lessen substantially. It's a great daily practice to have. If I slack off and I take, 2 weeks or 3 weeks and I don't do that 1 minute or 2 minutes of concentration, I start to feel some tightening again. And then if I do it again, within a couple of hours, I don't even notice that spot was hurting anymore. And so, it's a great daily practice to have. So feeling feelings and feeling emotions is a really hard thing to talk about, and it's a hard thing to put into practice, but that's something to focus on, is the Tony Stark arc reactor. And actually, I think that the artwork for this episode is going to be Tony Stark's arc reactor in his chest, because I think it's the coolest thing. And I just bought a tank top that has that logo, or has that arc reactor, because it's fucking awesome. So that's what I've got for the podcast this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. There's going to be an interview next week. There's going to be a lot more interviews coming up. I think, not counting the interview with Zoe last week, I feel like maybe four of the last five have been solo shows. People are still listening. It's June 19th as you listen to this, and there's been 5,000 listens on the podcast so far this month. So people are hearing it somewhere in the world. But thank you so much for tuning in. Check us out on patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. Leave an iTunes review. They've been getting a little stagnant. There's 88 reviews on there right now. The bulk of them are 5 stars. But if you like what it is that you hear, the more reviews, the more people can find it. That's really just the way that it works with the algorithms with iTunes. Join us on the Facebook group, the Mind and Fitness Podcast, The Leaders of Pain. And you can make suggestions to the podcast as well, things that you want me to talk about. So thanks so much for your time. Have a great rest of the week. Love you guys.